We'll come back to these passages and principles that you've come up with. Hopefully they'll kind of come to light as we go through some of the questions that we'll ask as we move into, in a little bit, part two of this case. We are up to class number 7, and I'll just put this real quickly, the course goals again. I highlighted the third one because that's really what we're trying to do now. Hopefully this is useful to make you think through a circumstance, how you would handle it, for us to talk about it as a group. That really is meant to be a little bit of this realistic exercise. I don't know if this case seems real to you or not. It's a little bit of a composite, but there's no circumstance in it that's not real. That some way or another, it's something that we've faced or we've done along the way. So I do feel like it's a pretty realistic circumstance, and hopefully as we're having to deliberate, think through what to do with it, it is preparing us in different ways for how we might serve in the future. Whether it's an elder or not, one of the things that occurred to me about cases like this, in looking back and remembering having gotten involved in those, are the men and women who are friends of those who are suffering like this and have been kind of pulled, with, maybe even without their willingness, into the circumstance, and have also had to be a source of encouragement, information, reinforcement of scriptural principles. So the ability to be prepared for something like this, whether you're an elder or not, you may be right there with somebody trying to help them through this type of situation. So I hope you feel like it is real. This is the middle of the three lessons we're doing on shepherding individuals. And we'll come along and talk a little bit more about the next couple of classes. I'm not going to pass out material until Wednesday night for the next section of this. And your only real assignment for the next one is just finish out all the remaining sections of lesson number 3. Whatever we haven't covered as of this morning, finish that up. All right. So we're going to go back now again to talking about Jerome and Sophia. And here we are once more, just very quickly, reminding ourselves of that Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock and all. One thing I didn't ask you, but in having written the case, I still don't know the answer to this. I find that amusing sometimes. I don't know the answer to my own case. I don't know whether Rob, the young evangelist, in calling you, has called you because he thinks you're the guy that can handle this. You're the elder I really believe will have a good answer to what should we do in the circumstance. Or if he's already made 3 calls and the other 3 elders didn't answer. And so now you're number 4.
Call you.
You what?
Or said to call you. The other called us.
So finally, you're the guy, and you're stuck with this. We don't really know that part of it and all, but all of this kind of initial part, you all answered as far as the initial question, what's on the table immediately? What needs to be decided quickly?
Whether it goes forward or not.
Yeah, he's got this idea in mind, or at least is asking, or he asked through Rob, should he make this public confession? And y'all were unanimous. Nobody stood up and said, absolutely, man, he needs to go forward. He needs to do it tonight and get it over with and do it. Nobody took that position. I think of this as being a little bit like, at this stage, you're a doctor in the ER, and somebody shows up and they're bleeding, and you don't really know how wounded they are. You don't know what's going on, so you're scrambling to try to figure all of this out. Sorry, Matthew. Yeah, they are good at it, man. Just give them a compliment. And what you're really trying to do, much like I think a doctor in the ER, you're trying to stabilize things just for the moment until you can get things slowed down enough to figure out what should we really do.
Triage.
It is like triage, right? So you're just trying to assess, what can I do? What can I do right now and help? And then we'll move on later. And you might change. I mean, everybody said, no, you shouldn't go forward that night. But you might decide later, yeah, a public confession is in order here. I don't think it fits this particular case, as we're going to talk about it further. But maybe that's what you'd be lost, other than the ability to kind of figure out some things along the way. Two more things about this before we try to move a little bit ahead. I want to be really respectful in these cases. These are made-up people. So sometimes it's kind of easy to take a tone or to think it through in a way that, you know, these aren't real people, but these are real circumstances. And we have brothers and sisters who have gone through this kind of situation, and I want to give honor to the fact that that's true. And I've thought back over circumstances in which neither party handled it well at all. Just made everything worse. It didn't keep their commitment to Christ in the way they should behave, neither party. And I can think of others where, you know, one party, perhaps the one who was the betrayer, just, you know, made an initial step forward, but they never really, truly handled their sin and overcame it and dealt with it the right way. And the person who was betrayed, just, I can't express to you how well they did what God would expect of somebody trying to forgive, trying to turn somebody's heart back to God. And I can think of, you know, other situations in which both of them did everything possible to do the right thing, and things worked out in a wonderful way so that y'all don't even know who they are. And very few people know. And that's the ideal. So, 1 o'clock, you get this call. One thing we didn't say the other day, what's the first thing you're going to do when you hang up from Rob?
Pray.
I think you really should pray, just right away. And I would suggest that you're inevitably going to say something in that prayer about, you know, God help Jerome and Sophia and so forth. I actually think most of that prayer, though, ought to be about you. You need to ask for some wisdom, some patience. You know, don't let me mess this up. Help me. Just something. And I think that's important because it sobers you up to consider that before you go and do it. The second thing I think that I suggest you do, maybe even before you call Jerome and figure out more of the facts and all here, picture the ideal circumstance. What would be the ideal circumstance 2 or 3 years from now? They're still together. They're both spiritually stronger than what they were whenever this started. Their children don't know anything about it. Now, right now, you don't know whether they know or don't know, but you're just trying to picture out the ideal. They're useful in the kingdom of God. They've both done everything they can to try to restore and to build their true marriage. Just picture it, because that's what you're working toward. And so if you can picture that. Now, when we go in and we have our initial conversation with Jerome, we might start adjusting a little bit what that ideal circumstance is based on the new facts and all. But we're still trying to picture that and so forth. Very quickly, what were some of the questions we wanted to ask Jerome as we're, you know, here in the afternoon, quickly trying before we get to Wednesday night and all? What were a few things we wanted to know?
Is that relationship done?
Yeah. Is it really done? What did you do to end it? How clear is it to Sophia that it's over and done? Right. That's a good one.
Is that another party, a member of the church?
Okay. Who is it?
Yeah.
And the reason that's going to make a lot of difference is it wouldn't necessarily change the mind about coming forward that night. But you got a different issue here. And we're going to talk about who kind of knows and doesn't know. But wow, you know, if it's another person there, you get another person in sin too, and you don't even know yet who it is and what. Yeah, that's a really good question.
Does the other person agree that the relationship is now over?
Yeah, if you ask them, I think it's back to Steve's point about is it over? Well, part of that may be part of the standard. You know, would they agree that it's done? So
I was just wondering, you might have talked about this last week, but since he talked to Rob, so there must be a trust relationship there. Would you tell Rob to say, hey, Rob, let's meet with him, but can you give him a call back and say, we'd like to meet, but I'm going to bring so-and-so elder with me to talk this through.
We're going to go to that in part two here, about who we're going to get to try to meet. Right now, you know, I figured out some way with Rob just to get hold of him. You know, in fact, one of the first questions I'd be asking Rob before him was, how do I get hold of him? I got to talk to him right now. Go ahead, Rob.
This is going to be a terrible question, but kind of how was it found out, or did you actually just go and confess?
Yeah, that is not a terrible question. That's a really good question. I was trying to figure out if he's going to characterize the question as terrible. You know, we got great questions,
yeah, right.
Good questions. No, I think that's really, that says a great deal. Because what oftentimes happens is that somehow the betrayed has stumbled across some information. Well, now it's like, yeah, he's confessing, but what choice does he have? It's like just right there on the table. Although we had one time where somebody had no question, had all the evidence in the world. This is what's going on. And Marty and I still had to practically browbeat the betrayer to acknowledge what had happened in that. But in that circumstance, why do you want to know the difference between those two? Why does that matter?
So, I think in a conversation you can see the genuine attitude of the person, but, you know, it can give you at least a stepping stone to say, okay, there's maybe a higher likelihood that they've just been, you know, found out and they need some way to get through this and still maintain their relationships, or they've been found out and it's exactly what needed to happen and they really are contrite with what they've done and desire reconciliation.
Yeah, it is. I think it's a lot easier to deal with a circumstance in which he has initiated all of it. You know, Jerome has just determined, look, I'm on the wrong path. I've got to fix this. Well, that says a lot more about him and the likelihood this is going to work out than he just suddenly got caught and maybe he's just doing everything he can to try to remedy the immediate circumstances.
Yeah, it also helps you understand the impact on the family. Like, how did she find out what...
Yeah. That's good.
One of the things I would want to know is, you know, if the relationship's over, is it somebody you're going to see on a regular basis?
Yeah.
If it's somebody from the workplace, that makes it a lot harder. And
neighbor.
They were probably generally not very good at hiding it from the coworkers.
Yeah, that's going to lead into some of this longer or more detail. When I can have a discussion with them, I think that's exactly right. That's something that's got to be explored. Santi and then Jenny.
I think another question is, what prompted him to make a public confession?
Yeah, why that? Why do you think that's necessary and all? Yeah, that may be helpful, Jake, and then...
Yeah, you know, where's Sophia at this time?
Yeah.
How much does she know?
Yeah, it's whatever that conversation was. Because remember, you only heard it through Rob. And you may not have heard it exactly. He's young, he's inexperienced, he may be overwhelmed with this. One more comment, we're going to move on to part two. Josh, you got a comment?
Same about the kids. What do the kids know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I want to know that right away. Do they know or do they not know? Now, we're going to move on. We're going to find out some things along the way. Or did I already say that? No, we didn't. Here we go. All right. So here's part two. Let's think this part through, and then we'll ask some questions. All right, so we obviously did postpone it. All of you said to do that, so I deferred your judgment. I wanted them to go forward, but all you said no, so we changed my mind. Anyway, we've managed to postpone that idea of it, and now we're going to have some of this is looking back. What did we learn? Y'all asked a number of questions in that day as quickly as you could. What did you learn? Well, here are some things you learned. None of the children have any idea that there was unfaithfulness in the marriage, and this is what Sophia had said. Somebody said, "Well, where is Sophia in all this?" Well, this is where she is. She has stated she hopes she can forgive Jerome and that she believes she wants them to stay together. It's also clear she's deeply hurt and she's struggling with her anger. She has shared Jerome's confession with her closest friend in the church, but asked her to keep it quiet. And to your knowledge, this friend, Rob, Jerome, Sophia, and you are the only ones in the church at that moment, that Wednesday afternoon you're asking this, that know about this affair. Which implies, by the way, that she's, whoever he was involved with is somebody outside of the church, not part of that group, or not part of any group. And Sophia and Jerome have both agreed that they would meet with you. So we'll talk about how to do some of those things. The first question, though, that's not part of the list of questions I'm going to show you in a minute that you were asked to go through, but I should ask is, looking at Sophia's statement, what little you have here in this case, what stands out to you about what she said there to you?
Hope.
Why does that stand out to you, Bill? What do you mean by
it? She's not sure, but that's her intention.
Okay. Yeah, so there's two words there. So the first part is she hopes she is able to forgive him, right?
Hope.
And what else?
Go ahead.
Okay. Good, Mark.
I have a little twinge of concern the way that's stated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just as if she's not sure that she can do it, and maybe that she has a choice.
Yeah. She may believe that she has some choice whether to do it or not do it, right? That's one possibility. The other part is just simply the idea that she knows that's not going to be easy, right? And so you're not hearing, and I'm not surprised. Would you be surprised that she's using words like, I hope I can forgive him. I believe I want us to stay together.
Well, that's still secondhand information because based on what you said, based on a conversation between Jerome and Rob, we don't know that Sophia's been talked to directly yet from a case study says.
Yeah.
There's questions there about should you meet together, should you meet individually? And I know from a situation I personally had to experience with when a guy was caught and he's trying to keep his life together and he knows it's chances to all fall apart, he's used scriptural principles on his wife to almost like overpower and tell her how she's supposed to feel and how she's supposed to respond, and it makes it really hard.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Now, so this is still secondhand, but having heard it, are you kind of attuned to the idea that she sees this as a difficult thing, right?
Well, it's really fresh, too.
So yeah, it's very fresh.
There's assuming that she just found out about it.
Very good. I think that I want us to think back for a moment to Ezekiel 34. Because there's a way, I believe, that we should view Sophia in this moment here. You remember the beginning part of that where God is complaining about the shepherds and how that they're not dealing with the individual sheep in a certain way. And then later on, he says, I'm going to be the good shepherd and I'm going to go do this. And he's got different types of circumstances for individual sheep. What kind of sheep is Sophia right now? You had to go back to Ezekiel 34. Which one is she? She's the broken or the injured, depending on your... She's the injured one. She's not scattered off somewhere. She's right there. She's not lost. But she's the sheep, you know, that stepped into the hole and broken her leg and can't keep up with the... She has suffered something right now. And she needs to be bound up and taken care of. And I think you need to approach it that way and think about it. It doesn't excuse the fact that she's got to do some things that are going to be difficult. And she needs to do the right thing. But nevertheless, I think realizing her circumstance from the beginning may help us out. All right, so let's go into...
The question is this. How do you know that she hopes and that she believes? Who did you hear that from?
Yeah, I think you've heard that from Jerome. This is what she said, and I just think that informs some of the questions we're going to ask her when we finally sit down. All right, so let's go to question number two first and try to deal with that one. You've got them. They're both willing to meet. What do you think about the very first time that you're going to go meet with them, meet with both of them together? Do you see some advantages, disadvantages? I see some shaking heads. So if you're shaking heads, I'm assuming you got a thought about it. So I'm going to pull at you first, Ryan, and let others speak up too. You don't seem to think that's a good idea.
I don't know. It would seem like you're going to get a lot of back and forth between them that's maybe not going to help the situation so much. And additionally, assuming you're an elder that has some amount of wisdom, if you speak to Jerome and you realize maybe he has some incorrect thoughts about things, that you can try and and give him some counsel and wisdom before meeting together to say, you need to think about this a little bit differently. You need to respond a little bit differently, instead of him just kind of blurting those things out with the meeting together between the two of you. And the same thing for Sophia.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the advantage of starting separate is you can work together with them to figure out how they're seeing the situation. And then once they're together, they're not going to communicate it well to one another. And you can assist with that. So I know, like, when I'm happy with Julie, we still don't communicate well. So, like, if you added something like this,
right,
there's going to be really bad communication. But if you've already talked with them separately, you can assist.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, Justin.
You don't have the facts from Sophia directly yet. And so
yeah.
Make sure she's in a safe environment to be open about that.
And I suspect you don't really have the facts yet from Jerome either. I mean, I called him from work. Right? I mean, I'm trying to make sure, should he go forward that night or not? And, you know, I got to get the basic facts and all. I would imagine you have a lot more questions for Jerome than you were able to kind of figure out that first time. So some of those, you think about it. Any advantages to go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say,
you finish that.
You know, she may be in a state of hysterics, right? I mean, she may be so... just hysterical with him in the room, and so that would not be conducive to a good conversation with the two of them together.
Right. Yeah. And you don't know that yet, right?
Right.
So it's like if you could assess some of that first before you suddenly throw two people together and find out, oh, this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have done that. Go ahead.
I'm trying to explain this. Depending on your relationship with him before, this is a totally new task you're embarking on with. And for me, you know, it's like here I am, a boy trying to do a man's job. You know what I mean? You're almost really entering a contract with them that you want to help them. And they have to accept that. And you have to kind of somehow or another convince them that's probably a good thing for them to do, is to accept your judgment or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you all are different from me, you feel totally overwhelmed, confused, sure you're going to make a mess of it. You know what I mean? I think you confess a lot of that. Say, here's my role. But you need, and there may be a small meeting together. It seems like the consensus is to separate them. But maybe a small meeting together where they don't do a lot of talking. Maybe it's you saying, here's an approach we'll take. I need to say hard things to both of you that I don't want to say in front of the other person or whatever. You know, just kind of little...
Laying out
like
some ground.
Here's where we're going. You know, we need really so much to talk about it, but, you know, I mean, we're going to work together here. Somehow you've got to establish your relationship, which unless you're just like the perfect elder, you didn't have that relationship until today.
Yeah, do you remember, how long have they been members there?
3 years.
And did Jerome come to you to deal with this situation?
No.
No, he didn't. And so that, I mean, we're making up a case. You may have a very close relationship, and Rob may have called you because he knows you're the elder that Jerome and Sophia know best, but that may not be the case at all. And you may even be thinking about perhaps there's someone else among the eldership that would be better to take the lead in this, even though you're already in.
Express your love and put a little hope. He does on top of it somehow.
Hope at the very beginning. We'll come back to that. That's really important. Yeah, Bill?
So being involved in some mediations, and that's how they're normally run, and I held back this opinion because everyone else thought it was a bad idea, but perhaps a short meeting, like Marty said, where they don't speak, maybe unless, and then what you also do in that meeting to kind of frame what's about to happen before you kind of caucus in different rooms, you paint the picture about what you would, what your goal is, that a year from now, 3 years from now, later on in their lives, this is what you want to come from this, what the result and what the outcome should be. Anyway.
That makes sense. Sometimes it's a matter of logistics. Do you really have an opportunity to go and sit down with both of them together and do that? But if you do, I like your points about control it you know, make sure they hear the message you think is most important. Don't let them start talking. There may be a point where it's really good to bring them both together, but you just don't know enough yet, and I think it is a very risky thing to do. In many ways, is thinking, think about yourself, Ben's point. How would I, you know, how well would I hold my tongue? How well would I do this? What is the likelihood that two people are going to handle some of that? And I will tell you, by the time we finish, I'm not going to give you these things until Wednesday. But we've got 6 pages of ideas, messages to give. 2 pages of messages, about 20 ideas of things that you ought to tell both of them. Make sure they know. 20 items or more, 2 pages of things to tell to the person who is the betrayer, which might not even necessarily be an affair. It could be other types of ways in which you betray somebody. And then 20 things to think through, pieces of advice to give to somebody who's betrayed. And the point of that is there's a bunch of things you already, as you're thinking about all of those things, you want to get out to them, and so you're trying to find a circumstance in which you can best do that. So you want them to listen for a period of time. All right, so let's move on down to this question about who do you want to go with you? Let's do it with Jerome. If maybe you've had a short meeting or not, but you know, now there's an opportunity to go and to meet with Jerome. And you may have different parties going with you to meet with them. Who would you perhaps like? Do you want to go with, meet with him alone, or do you want somebody with you? What's your preference? What would you want to do? What are you thinking about related to that?
Yeah. Kind of have more of a question. More about Rob, because of his inexperience.
Yeah.
Are you going to keep him? And he knows some information. Do you keep him going, you know, and helping in the meetings, or do you pull him back? I don't know.
What would help to make that decision? What do you think? I do have some thoughts. What do you think?
What's the relationship between Rob and Jerome? Was Rob called because he's the one who Jerome trusts the most?
Or did he couldn't get the other guy, you know, or whatever. No, I think that's right. And my thought in even writing this was to say, look, he's inexperienced, he doesn't know. He probably doesn't have a lot to offer here. And my general thought, this is me, that you could have a different viewpoint, and it depends on the circumstance. Let Rob go back to doing his work. Let him go, you know, preach the gospel, teach his classes and stuff. He doesn't need to get dragged completely into this. It might be a good experience and all those kinds of things. Unfortunately, you understand that in churches where there aren't elders and there's only one evangelist and it's Rob, and somebody has this situation, it's on him. He's the guy they look to figure this whole thing out. That's tough. And I think that one of the advantages of having elders is that you could cushion him and prevent him from having to get involved in that. You know. But yeah, that you could think that one through first. Hey, do I want Rob to go with me or not? What about, I mean, alone or not? Do you want somebody? Y'all don't have an opinion about it?
Seems like that's always best practice.
Why do you think it's best practice, Glenn?
Just because sometimes things get misconstrued.
Yeah.
I know with me, I don't catch every little detail, every nuance.
Yeah. I was thinking about something.
Same reason you'd want somebody with you in an ER.
And look, I take notes, okay? You know, I got my black book here. If y'all ever find this somewhere, please do not look at it. Then please get it to me immediately and tell me that I'm a terrible person for letting it out of my hand. It's got my name on the front, so you won't have any trouble knowing that it's mine. In there are lots of personal notes of situations like that. If I'm going to be taking notes, I may not hear everything, right? I was thinking about an interesting conversation Marty and I had with somebody at this church in Asheville that we went to, and he was explaining about the possibility of them having elders and how well their meetings have gone in the past, men's meeting. They haven't had elders enough. I heard it as kind of a casual conversation of, hey, we've been peaceful before, and we'll get through this future process. If we have elders, we'll be okay. Marty heard it as, ooh, I'm not so sure about the idea. Why do we need elders? Because we've always been good before. I don't know which one of us heard it right, But I did think that having heard it differently and then having the conversation about it meant that we were more attuned to the possibility that we didn't hear it correctly, right? And so now we're paying attention. So having two listeners makes a huge difference. If you're willing to, you know, compare notes later. Hey, I heard it. Oh, I didn't even notice that they said it. Or, you know, I'm making my note, and the other person is looking at their face and realizing, oh, you thought they were responding well. You should have seen their face when you said
it. It also gives you a chance to formulate your thoughts while the other person may be talking. And
that's very nice.
You heard something, you want to say it the right way.
Yeah. So the other adjacent issue is the involvement of the other elders. I'm assuming you'd like to pick one of the other elders.
Yes.
As a kind of maybe a first choice.
That would be my
not that, then that's...
Yeah.
But then I know there are some groups that have kind of a policy. One knows, they all know, and so you know, you almost... That's a side issue. You're going to get to that, I'm sure. Like, when does it need to be a whole eldership issue? How much do they need to know? And then maybe the church as well. I know that's later.
Yeah, I'm not trying to deal with that yet, but I like the idea of having an elder go with me. Or if there is a wiser person that you know has a close relationship with them or not, I mean, there's some thoughts there. But remembering at this moment, whoever you're likely to take with you, you're now opening up the information to, they don't know about this yet. But I like the idea of taking someone.
So should there be, you know, like a preliminary question to Jerome? Hey, look, I would like someone. Do you have someone in mind that you highly respect?
Yeah, I really want to bring another elder with me. Who would you feel best about? Who is Sophia close to? Whatever. Yeah. But I mean, you could ask some questions like that. Yeah, I think on that. I think it's really important that they know from the beginning who you're going to tell, what you're going to tell, and that's part of that building that trust that Marty was talking about before, Rich, and then Chad.
The other advantage of having another person is to make sure that there's kind of another witness for what you are saying to Jerome in case he misunderstands something or he goes and does something completely different from what you say, and, you know, you have somebody else there to say, well, no, that's not what we told them to do.
or even in the moment, if you're like explaining it and the other person's like, I don't think that's really what you mean. I think they're hearing this and you mean something else and could help to correct it. And I'll chat.
One of the choices, I think, was to take your wife. And I just offered this.
Sure.
Our wives in that role are invaluable. They're great counselors and offer guidance, and they can help in these situations. I would also caution that as an elder, there are things that you're going to know, and just because you know it doesn't mean you need to go share it with your wife.
Yeah, those are really good points. That you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the relationship later on in a little more detail, I hope, about the role of a wife and things. But here we're in the middle of this case. We got to talk about some of this now. We got to make a decision about our wife. I would be a little more hesitant to take Kay with me to meet with Jerome. There may be some value to that because he gets to also hear a woman's perspective on some of it, but I'd be a little hesitant in that regard.
Appreciate the first.
Yeah. I don't know enough yet.
I agree with everything.
Yep.
Maybe at first.
Switch it over for a moment to Sophia. Here, there isn't the option. I'll just throw this out pretty strongly. There isn't the option of going by yourself and doing it. Now, I have that option with Jerome, and I think for lots of reasons y'all have given good advice to my week. I don't have that option. That is a terrible idea. Don't do that. Okay, so somebody's going to go with me to see her. Who do you want to go? Who do you think should go with me?
You know,
that's my preference. Now, it may be that other elder. And I've been in situations with both where it was another elder. Now... What the case doesn't tell you, this is, you know, I think you need to think about this. Not every wife can do this. And we will talk, as Chad said, about how invaluable a wife is to an elder in trying to do this work. There is one other thing to think about carefully. If you take your wife with you, you should really love her for being willing to do it. This is not fair. These are not pleasant situations. And I've shared this in a lot of places where we've gone and talked about these kinds of circumstances. And I'm reminded of information that Kay has heard. I didn't want her to hear that. I mean, things that people have done that are just, they're just vile. They're terrible. And she ends up being exposed and aware of that. And I don't want her to hear that. And in general in life, she wouldn't come across some of those kinds of situations. And yet, if she's able to do it, stand there with you, help Sophia, how valuable that is. How much you should appreciate her. And so I think, if you believe she can do it and handle it, it would be great to have her there with you. And remember, too, who knows you better than your wife to know, this, by the way, this is one of Kay's responsibilities in life. She's really good at it. She'll say, I know what you were trying to tell them. Let me tell you what they heard. And that's useful, right? But also just a woman's perspective with another woman, it's useful. Okay, so we've done all that. We're coming down toward the end of, we got 10 minutes to solve all this case. We're not going to do all of it, but I think you will find these pages we're going to give you to be pretty valuable. What do you want to tell, let me ask this question a different way. When you're sitting down with Jerome, before you figure out the details of things that you want to tell him and stuff, what is the biblical principle messages that you think are really important for him to grasp at the very beginning? Back to some of those questions I put on the screen, and it's there. What do you want him to be mindful of from the beginning? Before you give him practical advice and everything else, what's on your mind? Yeah.
This might be too general, but for me, is what is his view of his relationship with God?
Okay.
And how he sees himself as being pleasing to God, his goals, is heaven that important to him that he's jeopardizing those goals by this behavior?
I don't think that's too general. I think that's very helpful in a way. We're going to get down to some details, and we can get so focused on how can I save this marriage? Is that my goal? I mean, yes, it is a goal. Okay. Is that the overarching goal that I'm thinking of? I want to keep this marriage together. What's my overarching goal?
His salvation.
I'd say it broadly. I know we're talking to him, but it's everybody affected by it, right? That's why I said, think of that ideal circumstance down the road. Children don't know about it. They've all grown up. They've seen a father and a mother who want to serve God no matter what. They're saved. Husband saved. The wife saved. Everybody who did know about it is impressed by the personal sacrifices they made to do this. My goal is to get everybody saved, right? I mean, that's... You can say something.
Yeah, just in general, I'm like too intimidated to literally say anything. Sort of what Marty said earlier, like if these were real people, I would not have come up with anything. Like, I just can't fathom giving advice. I don't know.
That's why when I have it, I pull out of the black book. You know, these are even cuts that will fit inside the black book.
Right.
These are my six pages because I'm like you, yeah. What do I need to say?
But the first thing that popped in my head was 1 Corinthians 13:4, just love is patient and kind, specifically patient and kind. I feel like Jerome is going to try to solve this too quick.
Yeah, that's a good one. What else? What else comes to mind? What does he need? What are his obstacles for him to be able to be saved? It's kind of part of what I want to get to.
Getting past his own feelings of guilt and sense of being forgiven by God for his own sake to continue on. And then perhaps secondary is if Sophia forgives him, believing that and living that.
Okay. So there are some passages, I think, about restoration, about the new man, about the ability to be someone different, if you really care to or not. Which is why some of Danny's questions to him are important. What has his relationship with God been like? Why did he end up in this circumstance? We may think he's a very godly man. We may find out he's very shallow in his faith, and we're trying to kind of help through that and all. What are the principles and thoughts that one way or the other you need to get across to Sophia? What are passages that come to mind, principles that she's going to need to understand?
First Peter 5:7 talks to anxiety.
Okay. What does it say? I know the beginning part of 1 Peter 5, I don't remember verse 7.
I'll go back. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety upon him, because he cares for you.
So, this leaning upon God, recognizing those. Go ahead, Marty.
I think Benny's right as far as the place to start, and the whole sense of being forgiven. But I think we can sometimes, people get too internally focused. Maybe as a beginning for later advice, more specific advice, start to say, you know, your role as a husband is to protect your wife from all harm. And start to put both what he will do and what she will do in the context of their God-given roles toward each other.
Yeah.
So pull them out of, like, how do I feel? I'm, you know, overwhelmed with guilt and all that. Important, for sure. But turn it the other way and say, you know, you, Mr. Husband, you are the lead. You have to solve this problem. Not taking charge. And, I mean, now you lost all the ability, really, for credibility. But you've got to rebuild that somehow.
Yeah.
So being the leader doesn't mean ordering people around. It means being the first to do the hard things.
And it certainly doesn't mean, as Jason was referring to, that I'm going to spend my time making sure she understands the passages and tell her what she needs to do.
Get out of yourself.
Right.
What are you going to do to win her back? To salve her pain, to rebuild your trust, to make her feel loved, a huge mountain, Mr.
Yes.
Husband, that you get to start first. And, you know, so that's
the
foundation, really, for later things that probably you'll say that are hard to do, but
that are more practical,
right,
or day to day,
right,
but nevertheless, that's the foundation.
Go home, write a letter to her, or, you know, things that pull you out of this self-centeredness, like, or are you trying to just save yourself? Or what are you going to do to fix?
Danny?
She's going to live the lesson that Jesus tried to teach Peter. How many times do I forgive my brother? 70 times 7. And every time she feels like she's ready to forgive him and something happens in the relationship, not the way that she expects, she's back at that same point, back trying to forgive him. Constantly having to be faced with that challenge.
Who's got the toughest job here?
She
really does. But in some ways, it seems like on the surface, it's him. He's been involved in this sin. He's got to change himself. He's got to fix that. He's got, you know, she's got the hardest job.
That it means she didn't do the most work. It means she has the most emotional challenge.
Yeah.
But he's
got lots and lots of things to do. I think the challenge for her, for whoever the betrayed is greater than that. And so there are passages of forginess and other things. The passage that came to mind, I'm not sure this is in the six pages. We should go back and try to add some of this. I thought a lot more about, you know, the responsibility of a husband is to save his wife. That's the point of 1 Corinthians 5. And being like Christ in the church, presenting your wife, you know, like Christ presenting the church, sanctified, washed, cleansed, okay? That's his job. He has failed. He has put her in a position where he's made her life, her ability to be like that, much, much harder, okay? But it's still his role. It's still what he's supposed to do. On the other hand, 1 Peter 3 talks about a wife and her conduct and everything else for an unbelieving husband. Well, here's a He's fallen, because we might at least say he's a fallen husband. What's her responsibility? She's supposed to conduct herself in a way in which she could win him to Christ. You think that's really kind of on her mind right now? That, oh, I need to win him to Christ. Look what he did to me, right? And all those passages about forgiveness, they're easy to quote, they're easy to understand, they are so hard to do. When you have legitimately been done wrong. So one of y'all said that, I'll just kind of finish with this, and I'll tell you how we'll try to piece together this at the end of Wednesday. One thing I appreciate, at least twice, I've watched someone who was betrayed conduct themselves in the most sacrificial way you could imagine, where they were trying to win back the betrayer. And it happened in one case. In one case, it just didn't happen at all. And I don't understand the strength of this woman and the way that she went about trying patiently to win back her husband. But one of these women once told the two of us that she had now learned a lesson out of all this. She had understood more than ever in her life what it meant for Christ to die on the cross for us. She could see what it meant when you have been done wrong by other people, but to make a sacrifice on behalf of them. And before, you know the story, but emotionally she understood what that cost was, and she loved Christ more because of that than she had previously. And I think that that's... I was appreciative to hear somebody who is able to grasp that and keep trying to do the right thing. All right, so I'm going to give you the 6 pages and just kind of highlight a few things off of it. I think they'll tell you far more than I could bring out in a class. I thank you for participating in all this. Finish out the rest of the lesson. We didn't get into a whole lot of the details. You know, things usually go off the wire. I mean, off the track a little bit as you get further into these and all. And I may say just at least one thing about part 3, but otherwise we'll try to move on to some other topics as we go. Thank you very much.